Our Lord Commander has given the training of recruits into the hands of Sir Alistair Thorne, the maester said gently. Only he may say, when a boy is ready to swear his vows, as you surely know. Why then come to me?
The Lord Commander listens to you, John told him, and the wounded and the sick of the night's watch are in your charge.
And is your friend Samuel wounded or sick?
He will be, John promised, unless you help. He told them all of it, even the part where it set ghosts at Rest's throat. Maester Aemon listened silently, blind eyes fixed on the fire, but Chet's face darkened with each word. Without us to keep him safe, Sam will have no chance, John finished. He's hopeless with a sword. My sister Arya could tear him apart, and she's not yet 10. If Sir Alistair makes him fight, it's only a matter of time before he's hurt or killed. Chet could stand no more. I've seen this fat boy in the common hall, he said. He is a pig, and a hopeless craven as well, if what you see is true.
Maybe it is so, Maester Aemon said. Tell me, Chet, what would you have us do with such a boy?
Leave him where he is, Chet said. The wall is no place for the weak. Let him train until he's ready, no matter how many years that takes. Sir Alistair shall make a man of him or kill him as the gods will. That's stupid, John said. He took a deep breath to gather his thoughts. I remember once I asked Maester Lewin why he wore a chain around his throat. Maester Aemon touched his own collar lightly, his bony, wrinkled fingers stroking the heavy metal links.
Go on.
He told me that a maester's collar is made of chain to remind him that he has sworn to serve, John said, remembering. I asked why each link was a different metal. A silver chain would look much finer with his grey robes, I said. Maester Lewin laughed. A maester forges his chain with study, he told me. The different metals are each a different kind of learning. Gold for the study of money and accounts, silver for healing, iron for warcraft. And he said there were other meanings as well. The collar is supposed to remind a maester of the realm he serves. Isn't that so? Lords are gold, and knights steel, but two links can't make a chain. You also need silver and iron and lead, tin and copper and bronze and all the rest. And those are farmers and smiths and merchants and the like. A chain needs all sorts of metals, and a land needs all sorts of people. Maester Aemon smiled.
And so?
The Night's Watch needs all sorts, too. Why else have rangers and stewards and builders? Lord Randall couldn't make Sam a warrior, and Sir Alistair won't either. You can't hammer tin into iron, no matter how hard you beat it. But that doesn't mean tin is useless. Why shouldn't Sam be a steward? Chet gave an angry scowl. I am a steward. You think it's easy work? Fit for cowards? The Order of Stewards keeps the watch alive. We hunt and farm, tend the horses, milk the cows, gather firewood, cook the meals. Who do you think makes your clothing? Who brings up supplies from the south? The Stewards. Maester Aemon was gentler.
Is your friend a hunter?
He hates hunting, John had to admit.
Can he plough a field? The maester asked. Can he drive a wagon or sail a ship? Could he butcher a cow?
No. Chet gave a nasty laugh. I've seen what happens to soft lordlings when they're put to work. Set them to churning butter and their hands blister and bleed. Give them an axe to split logs and they cut off their own foot. I know one thing Sam could do better than anyone.
Yes, Maester Aemon prompted.
John glanced warily at Chet, standing beside the door, his boils red and angry. He could help you, he said quickly. He can do sums, and he knows how to read and write. I know Chet can't read, and Clydus's weak eyes, Sam read every book in his father's library. He'd be good with the ravens, too. Animals seemed to like him. Ghost took him straight off. There's a lot he could do besides fighting. The Night's Watch needs every man. Why kill one to no end? Make use of him instead. Maester Aemon closed his eyes, and for a brief moment John was afraid that he'd gone to sleep. Finally he said,
Maester Lewin taught you well, John Snow. Your mind is as deft as your blade, it would seem.
Does that mean...
It means I shall think on what you have said,
the maester told him firmly.
And now I believe I am ready to sleep. Chet, show our young brother to the door.
Tyrion. They had taken shelter beneath a copse of aspens just off the high road. Tyrion was gathering dead wood while their horses took water from a mountain stream. He stooped to pick up a splintered branch and examined it critically.
Will this do? I'm not practiced at starting fires. Morric did that for me.
A fire? Bronn said, spitting. Are you so hungry to die, dwarf? Have you taken leave of your senses? A fire will bring the clansmen down on us for miles around. I mean to survive this journey, Lannister.
And how do you hope to do that? Tyrion asked. He tucked the branch under his arm and poked around through the sparse undergrowth looking for more. His back ached from the effort of bending. They had been riding since daybreak, when a stone-faced Selin Corbray had ushered them through the bloody gate and commanded them never to return.
We have no chance of fighting our way back, Bronn said. But two can cover more ground than ten and attract less notice. The fewer days we spend in these mountains, the more likely we are to reach the Riverlands. Ride hard and fast, I say. Travel by night and hole up by day. Avoid the road where we can. Make no noise and light no fires.
Tyrion Lannister sighed.
A splendid plan, Bronn. Try it.
As you like,
and forgive me if I do not linger to bury you.
You think you outlive me, dwarf?
The sellsword grinned. He had a dark gap in his smile where the edge of Savara's Egan's shield had cracked a tooth in half. Tyrion shrugged.
Riding hard and fast by night is a sure way to tumble down a mountain and crack your skull. I prefer to make my crossing slow and easy. I know you love the taste of horse, Bronn, but if our mounts die under us this time, we'll be trying to saddle shadow cats. And if truth be told, I think the clans will find us no matter what we do. Their eyes are all around us.
He swept a gloved hand over the high, wind-carved crags that surrounded them. Bronn grimaced.
Then we're dead men, Lannister.
If so, I prefer to die comfortable, Tyrion replied. We need a fire. The nights are cold up here, and hot food will warm our bellies and lift our spirits. Do you suppose there's any game to be had? Lady Lysa has kindly provided us with a veritable feast of salt beef, hard cheese, and stale bread. But I would hate to break a tooth so far from the nearest maester.
I can find meat.
Beneath a fall of black hair, Bronn's dark eyes regarded Tyrion suspiciously.
I should leave you here with your fool's fire. If I took your horse, I'd have twice the chance to make it through. What would you do then, dwarf?
Die, most like.
Tyrion stooped to get another stick.
You don't think I'd do it?
Or you'd do it in an instant if it meant your life.
You were quick enough to silence your friend Shigan when he caught that arrow in his belly. Bronn had yanked back the man's head by the hair and driven the point of his dirk in under the ear, and afterward told Catelyn Stark that the other sellsword had died of his wound.
He was as good as dead, Bron said, and his moaning was bringing them down on us. Chicken would have done the same for me, and he was no friend, only a man I rode with. Make no mistake, dwarf. I fought for you, but I do not love you.
It was your blade I needed, Tyrion said, not your love.
He dumped his armful of wood on the ground. Bron grinned.
You're bold as any sellsword, I'll give you that. How did you know I'd take your part?
No.
Tyrion squatted awkwardly on his stunted legs to build the fire.
I tossed the dice. Back at the inn, you and Chicken helped take me captive. Why? The others saw it as their duty, for the honor of the lords they serve, but not you two. You had no lord, no duty, and a precious little honor. So why trouble to involve yourselves?
He took out his knife and whittled some thin strips of bark off one of the sticks he'd gathered to serve as kindling.
Well, why do sellswords do anything? For gold. You were thinking Lady Catelyn would reward you for your help. Perhaps even take you into her service. Here, that should do, I hope. Do you have a flint?
Bronn slid two fingers into the pouch at his belt and tossed down a flint. Tyrion caught it in the air.
My thanks, he said. The thing is, you did not know the Starks. Lord Eddard is a proud, honourable, and honest man, and his lady wife is worse. Oh, no doubt she would have found a coin or two for you when this was all over, and pressed it in your hand with a polite word and a look of distaste. But that's the most you could hope for. The Starks look for courage and loyalty and honour in the men they choose to serve them. And if truth be told, you and Chicken were low-born scum.
Tyrion struck the flint against his dagger, trying for a spark.
Nothing.
Bronn snorted.
You have a bold tongue, little man. One day someone is like to cut it out and make you eat it.
Everyone tells me that.
Tyrion glanced up at the sellsword.
Did I offend you? Oh, my pardons. But you are scum, Bronn. Make no mistake. Duty, honour, friendship, what's that to you?
No, don't trouble yourself. We both know the answer. Still, you're not stupid.
Once we reached the Vale, Lady Stark had no more need of you. But I did. And the one thing the Lannisters have never lacked for is gold. When the moment came to toss the dice, I was counting on your being smart enough to know where your best interest lay. Happily for me, you did.
He slammed stone and steel together again, fruitlessly.
Here, said Bronn, squatting. I'll do it.
He took the knife and flint from Tyrion's hand and struck sparks on his first try. A curl of bark began to smoulder.
Well done, Tyrion said. Scum you may be, but you're undeniably useful, and with a sword in your hand you're almost as good as my brother Jaime. What do you want, Bronn? Gold, land, women? Keep me alive, and you'll have it.
Bronn blew gently on the fire, and the flames leaped up higher.
And if you die?
Why then, I'll have one mourner whose grief is sincere,
Tyrion said, grinning.
The gold ends when I do.
The fire was blazing up nicely. Bronn stood, tucked the flint back into his pouch, and tossed Tyrion his dagger.
Fair enough, he said. My sword's yours, then. But don't go looking for me to bend the knee and milord you every time you take a shit. I'm no man's toady.
Nor any man's friend, Tyrion said. I've no doubt you'll betray me as quick as you did Lady Stark, if you saw a profit in it. If the day ever comes when you're tempted to sell me out, remember this, Bronn. I'll match their price, whatever it is. I like living. And now, do you think you could do something about finding us some supper?
Take care of the horses, Bronn said, unsheathing the long dirk he wore at his hip.
He strode into the trees. An hour later, the horses had been rubbed down and fed, the fire was crackling away merrily, and a haunch of a young goat was turning above the flames, spitting and hissing.
"All we lack now is some good wine to wash down our kid," Tyrion said.
"That, a woman, and another dozen swords,"
Bronn said. He sat cross-legged beside the fire, honing the edge of his long sword with an oilstone.
There was something strangely reassuring about the rasping sound it made when he drew it down the steel.
"It will be full dark soon," the sellsword pointed out. "I'll take first watch. For the good it'll do us. It might be kinder to let them kill us in our sleep."
"Oh, I imagine they'll be here long before it comes to sleep."
The smell of the roasting meat made Tyrion's mouth water. Bronn watched him across the fire.
"You have a plan?" he said flatly, with a scrape of steel on stone.
"A hope, I call it," Tyrion said. "Another toss of the dice."
"With our lives as a stake?"
Tyrion shrugged.
"Well, what choice do we have?"
He leaned over the fire and sawed a thin slice of meat from the kid.
"Ah!"
he sighed happily as he chewed. Grease ran down his chin.
"A bit tougher than I'd like, and in want of spicing, but I'll not complain too loudly. If I were back at the Eyrie, I'd be dancing on a precipice in hopes of a boiled bean."
"And yet you gave the turnkey a purse of gold," Bronn said.
"A Lannister always pays his debts."
Even Maud had scarcely believed it when Tyrion tossed him the leather purse. The jailer's eyes had gone big as boiled eggs as he yanked open the drawstring and beheld the glint of gold.
"I kept the silver," Tyrion had told him, with a crooked smile. "But you were promised the gold, and there it is."
It was more than a man like Maud could hope to earn in a lifetime of abusing prisoners.
"And remember what I said. This is only a taste. If you ever grow tired of Lady Arryn's service, present yourself at Casterly Rock, and I'll pay you the rest of what I owe you."
With golden dragons spilling out of both hands, Maud had fallen to his knees and promised that he would do just that. Bronn yanked out his dirk and pulled the meat from the fire. He began to carve thick chunks of charred meat off the bone as Tyrion hollowed out two heels of stale bread to serve as trenchers.
"If we do reach the river, what will you do then?"
the sellsword asked as he cut.
"Oh, a hoer, and a feather bed, and a flagon of wine for a start."
Tyrion held out his trencher, and Bronn filled it with meat.
"And then to Casterly Rock or King's Landing, I think. I have some questions that want answering, concerning a certain dagger."
The sellsword chewed and swallowed.
"So you are telling it true. It was not your knife."
Tyrion smiled thinly.
"Do I look a liar to you?"
By the time their bellies were full, the stars had come out, and a half-moon was rising over the mountains. Tyrion spread his shadow-skin cloak on the ground and stretched out with his saddle for a pillow.
"Our friends are taking their sweet time."
"If I were them, I'd fear a trap," Bronn said. "Why else would we be so open, if not to lure them in?"
Tyrion chuckled.
"Then we ought to sing, and send them fleeing in terror."
He began to whistle a tune.
"You're mad, dwarf,"
Bronn said, as he cleared the grease from under his nails with his dirk.
"Where's your love of music, Bronn?"
"If it was music you wanted, you should have gotten a singer to champion you."
Tyrion grinned.
"That would have been amusing. I can just see him fending off Ser Vardis with his wood harp."
He resumed his whistling.
"Do you know this song?" he asked.
"You hear it here and there, in inns and all houses."
"Moorish, the seasons of my love, sweet and sad, if you understand the words. The first girl I ever bedded used to sing it, and I've never been able to put it out of my head."
Tyrion gazed up at the sky. It was a clear, cold night, and the stars shone down upon the mountains as bright and merciless as truth.
"I met her on a night like this," he heard himself saying. Jamie and I were riding back from Lannisport when we heard a scream, and she came running out into the road with two men dogging her heels, shouting threats. My brother unsheathed his sword and went after them, while I dismounted to protect the girl. She was scarcely a year older than I was, dark-haired, slender, with a face that would break your heart. It certainly broke mine. Low-born, half-starved, unwashed, yet lovely. They'd torn the rag she was wearing half off her back, so I wrapped her in my cloak while Jamie chased the men into the woods. By the time he came trotting back, I'd gotten a name out of her and a story. She was a crofter's child, orphaned, when her father died of fever on her way to, well, nowhere, really. Jamie was all in a lather to hunt down the men. It was not often outlaws dead prey on travellers so near to Castle Rock, and he took it as an insult. The girl was too frightened to send off by herself, though, so I offered to take her to the closest inn and feed her while my brother rode back to the rock for help. She was hungrier than I would have believed. We finished two whole chickens and part of a third, and drank a flagon of wine, talking. I was only 13, and the wine went to my head, I fear. The next thing I knew, I was sharing her bed. If she was shy, I was shyer. I'll never know where I found the courage. When I broke her maidenhead, she wept. But afterward, she kissed me, and sang her little song, and by morning, I was in love.
You?
Ron's voice was amused. Absurd, isn't it? Tyrion began to whistle the song again. I married her, he finally admitted.
A Lannister of Castle Rock, wed to a crofter's daughter, Ron said. How could you manage that?
Oh, you'd be astonished at what a boy can make of a few lies, 50 pieces of silver, and a drunken septon. I dared not bring my bride home to Castle Rock, so I set her up in a cottage of her own, and for a fortnight we played at being man and wife. And then the septon sobered and confessed all to my lord father. Tyrion was surprised how desolate it made him feel to say it, even after all these years. Perhaps he was just tired. That was the end of my marriage. He sat up and stared at the dying fire, blinking at the light.
He sent the girl away.
He did better than that, Tyrion said. First he made my brother tell me the truth. The girl was a whore, you see. Jamie arranged the whole affair, the road, the outlaws, all of it. He thought it was time I had a woman. He paid double for a maiden, knowing it would be my first time. After Jamie had made his confession, to drive home the lesson, Lord Tywin brought my wife in and gave her to his guards. They paid her fair enough, a silver for each man. How many whores command that higher price? He sat me down in the corner of the barracks and bade me watch. And at the end, she had so many silvers, the coins were slipping through her fingers and rolling on the floor. The smoke was stinging his eyes. Tyrion cleared his throat and turned away from the fire to gaze into the darkness. Lord Tywin had me go last, he said in a quiet voice, and he gave me a gold coin to pay her, because I was a Lannister, and worth more. After a time, he heard the noise again, the rasp of steel on stone, as Brun sharpened his sword.
13, or 30, or 3. I would have killed a man who did that to me.
Tyrion swung around to face him. You may get that chance one day. Remember what I told you? A Lannister always pays his debts.